Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because the world's so full of chaos and madness. If you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. There's an awful lot of news out there, an awful lot of information, and most of it's very, very scary. And most of it will dislodge fillings from your teeth if you look into them too intensely. So we like to look at a little bit of the lighter side here, man. It's very important. I think so anyway. I could be wrong. My very special guest is Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com and co-partner over at RealGorillaMedia.com as well. And she's got some very scary articles for us that we're going to laugh about. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Scary article number one. Something about heavy metal poisoning?
Yeah. Five cosmetic products that will give you heavy metals poisoning. And so there was a study at UC Berkeley. Researchers found that toxic chemicals added to lipstick, such as cadmium, is linked to renal failure. Now, a toxicologist for the Personal Care Products Council, which is a trade group for the cosmetics industry, kind of like a lobby, she claims, her name is Linda Loretz, she says that there's nothing that is unsafe or to be unexpected, that the FDA approves titanium and aluminum as ingredients, and that certain metals are necessary for good nutrition. However, the metals that they're putting into these products, and it's not just lipstick, folks. It's also hair dye, whitening toothpaste, eyeliner, nail color. They're putting lead, arsenic, mercury, aluminum, zinc, chromium, and iron, just for a few. And all you would need is to apply lipstick twice a day to your lips to receive one-fifth of the daily acceptable dose of heavy metals. Stop wearing makeup, folks. Just stop. Stop wearing it. You don't need it. It's false advertising.
Now, think about this as well. You say putting lipstick on is like a fifth of your daily. So think about this. She also going to be putting on her blush, eyeliner.
Foundation.
Uh-huh. So that's...
mascara.
That's taken it up to 100%, 120% threshold, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And it's only just doing it once a day.
Yes. Yeah,
if there's any touch-ups and stuff like that, got to go into powder your nose at the, I don't know, at the movie bathroom or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. After dinner, you reapply your makeup. Some of the more famous names who are poisoning their customers are Laura Mercer and MAC, L'Oreal, Mary Kay, and Sephora. These products contain mercury, arsenic, barium, cadmium, nickel, lead, selenium, and thallium. And it's also the hair dye. Hair dye contains massive amounts of lead. So, you know, don't get so upset. Now, if you don't care, you'll come down with cancer, reproductive disorders, neurological problems, memory loss, mood swings, and dermatitis.
Heavy metal poisoning can manifest as a lot of different things, and that's why it's very difficult to isolate it when where it's all coming from. Maybe that's why people haven't cottoned on quite so soon.
And it's also cumulative. So you think about it, like a 14-year-old or 12-year-old will start wearing lip gloss and nail polish and then go throughout their entire life painting their face and putting... And it's not just the makeup, it's the products, it's the... all of those... microbeads that clean your face, that exfoliate, which means clean. Those are full of parabens. And when they do biopsies of breast cancer tumors, they are 99% paraben. And these products are now being geared toward men, too. And men are coming down with breast cancer, and they're finding parabens in those tumors as well. And it's throughout a lifetime. So by the time you're in your 40s or 50s and you have cancer, you don't think that, hey, wait a minute, it was that blood red lipstick that I like to wear.
Yeah. Men don't wear the blood red lipstick. I implore you. It's not worth it.
Sometimes they do.
Well, overall, think about the constant saturation, because it's not just these products that are coming out from major companies to keep us looking pretty and at our best that we're saturated by and absorbing heavy metals from every day. It's in the water, it's in the food,
mm-hmm.
it's in the air from all the cars and everything driving around, man.
The chemtrails.
Yeah. You know, even chemtrails aside, we're just bathing in toxic heavy metals. And you have a look at the charts and statistics, I'm sure, you know, you see massive, massive spikes of all these mental disorders and mm-hmm. obesity. Obesity is one of the other interesting things. It's a side effect of heavy metal poisoning as well.
And it's in some of your supplements that you take. I've said it before and I'll say it here again. If you are taking tangy tangerine, it contains about 95% of it is radioactive material, including some of the materials that they make nuclear rods that they use in nuclear power plants. And yes, it is natural. You dig it out of the ground, of course. But are you going to, you know, do you want to drink a cup of arsenic or anything radioactive? Absolutely not. You're not going to purposefully do that. So why would you unintentionally do it?
You're talking about specifically chromium, right?
Yeah, thallium. Oh gosh, I can't remember. It starts with a T. I have, if anybody's interested who's listening, email me at occupycorporatism@gmail.com, and I have a PDF document that my husband and I did on tangy tangerine, and we went through all of the studies. We went through the list of ingredients and looked up all of the studies to see what these ingredients do, and at least 95% of it was all radioactive heavy metals poisoning, and it's just terrible.
That's nasty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, isn't it interesting that the things that you take to keep yourself healthy and looking pretty are the things that are going to destroy your health and make you look ugly?
Well, that's the point I'm making, Harry. Our natural beauty has been taken away from us. We've been told that we're not pretty or not acceptable if we don't have all of these products and don't take care of this. There are natural ways to look attractive that we don't adhere to. We don't exercise and spend time out in the sun. We lather ourselves up I'm having a senior moment.
just take a minute. A few breaths. Something about lathering ourselves.
Is that stuff that you put on your skin when you're out in the sun?
Sunscreen.
Sunscreen, thank you. They found that that actually causes skin cancer.
Well, yeah, they got very, very tiny aluminium particles and things of that nature in the stuff that breaches the skin barrier. Your pores aren't small enough to keep them out of your body.
Right, and they've also found that it creates a barrier against your skin, so you can't absorb the vitamin D. And the best way to get vitamin D is spend at least 30 minutes out in direct sunlight. And it'll improve your mental health, and it'll improve your physical health. That's all you need.
Oh, if everything, vitamin D deficiency causes so many problems. My mate Barry, he's got these sort of welts, like these sores that were popping up all over his legs. And I went to the doctor. Doctor wanted to give him steroid cream. He's like, nah, bro. And then he goes to the naturopath. Naturopath instantly, vitamin D deficiency. You know, your body's not got the ability to heal these sores up and things like that. Your immune system's dying, mate. You need to be out in the sun.
Right. My son just had the sniffles. Was sneezing yesterday. We immediately got some oranges and some apples and put him out in the sun and went to play. And he's fine today. We gave him a little bit of echinacea with some golden seal, but other than that, he's absolutely fine today.
I prefer lemons. I remember this one time I thought they had the flu coming on, you know, when you start getting that real scratchy throat and you know that tomorrow's going to be a real bad day. I had three lemons and three glasses of water. Woke up and I was fine.
Yeah, my mother always gave me herbal tea with lemon and honey.
Also, at the meeting houses here in New Zealand with the Māori, the big marais that they've got, they always serve lemon water.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. That's all I drink when I go to the restaurant. I just order water. But I know that it's not, you know, unfluoridated water. So, but
yeah, well, you can't win them all. See, again,
right.
Have you noticed some people get sort of puritanical about, I understand the mentality, how they don't want any heavy metals of any kind. And they're always telling other people about these things that are in the food and why you shouldn't eat this and why you shouldn't drink that and so on and so forth. I'm of the opinion that, you know the poison, but just drink it anyway, bro. You know, the life's got a whole of a lot of things to worry about. And as long as you know to avoid, for the most part, these bad things that are going to get you out of control, you know, if you're not dosing yourself every day, you should be all right, and have a look at some other the other good things that you can get in there. You know, people get really stressed out about their life and their health, and you know what's interesting? When you're worrying about your health, it makes you unhealthy.
Yes, stress does a whole number, and it's individual. Your body, each individual body reacts to stress differently. So you got to just take a deep breath, count to 10, and relax. It's okay.
Yeah. Now, thinking about this as well, you're talking about a number of different products with huge quantities of heavy metals. And it reminded me of when I was a phone salesman and I was talking to this toy importer. And I asked him about the lead paint that was put on the toys, you know, it came out of China. It was a big scandal. This was years ago. And he said the Chinese were just getting a bad rap. I said, why is that? He says, because the specifications from the American toy companies specifically said, with lead paint, they were following directions. They weren't trying to find cheaper materials and try and pull one over people or, you know, being a little bit dangerous or anything like that. The American companies who designed the toys wanted lead paint. Now, you have a look at that mentality and you think about this. Maybe if you're part of an unwitting conspiracy to dumb people down, make them sicker, more slovenly, to focus on things that they ought not be focusing on, you know, like over-focus on their own appearance and so on and so forth. Would you be benefiting from all of this? Does it serve an overall agenda? What do you reckon, Suzanne?
Absolutely. Well, if you take fluoride, different genetic makeups like African-American people and people of Hispanic descent, the fluoride bonds to lead molecules and actually enhances the lead poisoning. So absolutely, everything works in tandem. We have a holistic problem, folks. It's not just one problem, one solution. We like to think that. If you see a problem, you come up with a solution, and you fix it. And then you realize that it's not fixed. It's because it's encompassing. It's all-encompassing. There's a bunch of things going on. One problem may need 20 solutions or 1,000 solutions. Don't just look at one thing and say, I can answer it with this one answer, because then you got to think about all the other factors, like we were talking about with metals exposure. We're exposed to metals in so many different fashions and so many different facets of our daily life that if you stop wearing makeup, it doesn't mean that you're not getting heavy metals poisoning. It just means that you've taken care of one aspect of the poisoning.
One source out of many. I'm thinking about it like a truth of Terminator. You remember the start of Terminator 2 when he's walking into the bar and his little Vision's kind of like scanning everything and identifies each and every motorcycle that's on the rack there, and the make and models of the trucks, the height and vulnerabilities and sizes of all these people that he's walking past. And you think about that, think about like a truth of Terminator, bro. And you just... looking over there at the other side of the street, and it suddenly identifies lead coming out of the petrol tanks of passing cars or something like that, or like detecting excess radiation levels from Fukushima, or detecting excess barium and aluminium and strontium from the chemtrails above you, detecting fluoride residue in the water that's running around the streets and stuff like that, you know, detecting EMF radiation frequencies coming off the power lines that are standing right above you. There would be umpteen different things wrong with this picture.
Yes. Yes.
We're bathing in it.
Yes. So we need
this
to...
This is why we need holisticals. This is why we need, as you say, a holistic solution. Because mm-hmm. you can't solve one problem because it's not just one problem. Okay? If you're hungry and thirsty, do you think just eating is going to sate your thirst as well? No, because you've got two problems, you need two solutions. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com and RealGorillaMedia.com.
I got some so-called friends. Smile right to my face. All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Who's that? Are you on? I'm flying a JFK. My heart goes boom, boom, boom. I know
Welcome
that
back.
Customs man.
Oh, yeah, well, baby. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's all about loving people from a distance, kind of like the medical industry and the psychiatric industry, who dump you out of their facility if their drugs aren't working, with a few drugs, of course, and some snacks, and then pop you on a freaking Greyhound bus to pretty much everywhere in the country, and after a few days, your drugs run out. And then you have a massive, massive come down off of being overly medicated. And then all of a sudden, there's reports in the news of all these crazy people going nuts and doing very, very nasty things. And so it gives an endless justification. And incidentally, a source of funding to the crazy, crazy psychiatric industry. Isn't it funny? Now, the craziest Yes. among us are the ones who tell everybody else that they're crazy.
Absolutely. That's the article that I wrote this week. Patient dumping, psychotics released from hospitals with one-way bus ticket. Now, in Nevada, there is the Ryson Neal Psychiatric Hospital, which is state-funded. And they were found to have over a several-year period, I think it was about 5 or 10 years, 1,500 psychiatric patients. Now, remember, these people were never meant to be discharged. And because they were not reacting to the treatment properly, the hospital didn't want to lose their federal funding through the state. So they put them on a Greyhound bus. They used to call it Greyhound therapy. Now they just call it patient dumping. And yes, they release them into the public. And who cares?
Now, think about the funding sources here. So it's what, state mandated that they have to have some kind of effect or some kind of positive result from the drugs that they're given the patient, or they get this funding cut back?
Yes, exactly. They don't want to keep funding a psychiatric hospital that is not doing any good. So
How are any psychiatric hospitals getting funded then?
Some of them are privately owned and funded, and some of them are state and federally funded. So this one, Rice and Neal Psychiatric Hospital, was the one that the Sacramento Bee exposed, and I quoted them in my article. They let out, 1,500 psychiatric patients who were never meant to be see the outside of a psychiatric hospital. These people are very, very sick, and they need to be institutionalized. But because they weren't responding to the psychiatric drugs or the treatment that they were getting at the hospital didn't want to have that, tarnish their record and lose any of their funding from the state of Nevada and the government. So they go ahead and get rid of them, and then it makes their numbers look better. It makes them look like everybody's responding to treatment and they deserve all of the money that they're getting. Meanwhile, like you said, people are being bussed out with a one-way bus ticket. And one gentleman in Sacramento, when he got off the bus, he was so freaked out that he turned himself in. And that's how they found out. In other instances, it could be that one of these people, and they're bussed anywhere, not just Sacramento, but New York, Chicago, anywhere in the country. And it's a one-way bus ticket. They don't care where they end up or what happens to them. It's not like they're sending them to a specific place or like a shelter or anything like that. They're just sending them out.
Do they make sure that they go out of state so that they get turned into a mental institution, it won't be theirs? They'll just think it's from somewhere else.
Yes. Yes, and that's what made Sacramento very, very upset. Now, the governor in Sacramento said that he was most concerned about taxpayer funding dealing with these people coming into the cities and causing problems. But to me, the main problem is that we hear all the time in the news that people do crazy, wacky things. And it could possibly be that one of them or several of them are one of these people who were never meant to be released, and yet they were. And these people are psychotic. They're very, very not okay. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, they're a few slices short of a loaf of bread.
Absolutely.
And here's the other thing. You said 1,500 coming from this one institution.
Yes.
Okay. That would lead me to believe that there'd be similar, comparable numbers to other similar size. It's probably a nationwide, that might be a nationwide thing, right? And you got 1,500 patients. How much money are you getting funded for 1,500 patients for all the meds and everything like that? You're paying your staff. Then you send that patient across to the country and they wind up in another institution who then get extra funding and stuff like that to take care of you for that point when they pop you on a different Greyhound bus and send you back to a different state. And then when you freak out, you go to an institution there and they get the federal or state funding and things like that. Do you see what I'm getting at here? These
Absolutely.
People could be used as a pinball money-making machine being bounced around the country.
Absolutely. And these are real human beings. These are, mental disorder, it's not their fault. And they're being used. They're being used not only for that purpose, but if they wanted to say, hey, let's just release somebody who's absolutely insane into the general public and see what happens. And then, we need the police state. We need all this justification for all of these controls that we have because there are crazies out there. And lock your doors and be very scared and put leashes on your children and be careful because there are crazy people out there. But they're the ones putting the crazy people out there.
Yep. And you see it all the time, don't you? I was just wondering about this too because I think I must have had many conversations with people who are actually scared to kind of go out in public and meet new people because they've seen all these stories on the news that the people are crazy.
Mm-hmm. And Anderson Cooper did a little bit about that a couple of years ago. There was a gentleman who was a paraplegic, And he was released from a Kaiser Permanente hospital because he couldn't pay. He was homeless and broke. And they didn't bring a wheelchair. They dumped him off at a rescue mission, and the rescue mission couldn't take him. So they brought him back, and the morning crew that came in released him back to the same place. Now, he was living in a car, and the CEO of Kaiser Permanente said that he had given them the address of the mission as his home address, and that they were just doing what they were supposed to do. But they were going to reprimand the driver, and none of the other staff members were implicated in this, and that this was not indicative of how they treat their patients. But over and over again, Anderson Cooper brought up instances where this has been happening.
Okay. Well, let's say we've got an epidemic on our hands. Something's driving people psychotic, isn't it? We were talking about heavy metal poisoning in the first segment.
That'll do it.
Now, see, here's an obscure connection, isn't it? You mm-hmm. talk about makeup and heavy metal poisoning, and it can cause mental defectives. And then, of course, once you go into the asylum, as it were, they dump you out because their drugs don't freaking work, and they probably, in all fairness, never have. And then somebody else gets you too. All of a sudden, your life becomes a destroyed, homeless operation. I mean, have you seen what happens to people when they're coming down cold turkey off of huge quantities of psychotropic drugs? It's insane, man. It's like train spotting times 10, and it doesn't just last for a couple of weeks or something while the junk gets out of your system, as with heroin. It lasts for like half a year of just prime suffering, you know, the cold sweats, paranoid episodes and things like that. You can't go off these drugs cold turkey.
Right.
They're freaking dangerous.
And they've done studies since the 60s and 70s. There was a documentary. It's on YouTube. Anyone listening, please go watch this. It's called The Placebo Effect, Cracking the Code. They have found over and over again that placebo works over 67% over the pharmaceutical. So, again, you don't need the pharmaceutical. Plus, if you believe that whatever you've been given or whatever's happened to you will heal you, your brain and your correlating with that belief will heal you just as well as this pharmaceutical, or not even better, because they give you a pharmaceutical and then they have to give you a pharmaceutical to combat the side effects of the first one and then the second one and then the third one, and on we go.
Before you know it, you're on 17 medications a day.
Yes, there was a doctor in that documentary who did surgery for arthritis, and he wanted to see if his surgery for knees was effective. So they did placebo surgery where they went ahead and brought the patient in but didn't actually perform the surgery. They did make incisions and made it look like they had, but they didn't. And then another test group actually had the surgery. And one gentleman who knew, found out 2 years later that he had had the placebo surgery, still was attributing his healing to the surgery and thanking the doctor for everything that he did, and the doctor didn't do anything for him. It was his belief that did it.
I think I have a brilliant business opportunity for any doctor out there. Fake surgery. It actually works to save the patient more than your real surgery. Just charge them the money and they'll get healed. Nobody will be the wiser. They'll have scars and everything. You know, what's he going to do? Reach inside and check?
A few doctors are starting to look into this, and thank God that they are. There was another gentleman. The doctor feels very bad about this. When you watch the documentary, he's just torn about this one patient that he had, because he was convinced that the patient had cancer. And the nurses were convinced, and even the patient was convinced, and they ran tests and treated him for cancer, and he ended up dying of cancer. Now, when they did the autopsy, he had no cancer in his body.
Well, he died of cancer without having cancer?
Yes, because he believed he had cancer and he died of cancer. His body manifested the symptoms of cancer. Yes.
Isn't that interesting? It's amazing what you believe about yourself really becomes yourself.
Absolutely. Well, I was talking to Mark Passio about belief yesterday on my show, because I think that this is really a huge part of the problem, if not the probably the answer to the problem that we're facing, that we believe what we're hearing, and we believe that the world is the way it is. And if we just choose not to comply with the system by not believing, by saying, look, I'm going to have a good day, regardless of whether or not you're ruining my day. I'm not going to let you ruin my day or my life. Consciously choose to do things that make you feel better on a daily basis, on a moment-to-moment basis, keeping your spirits up. I think that it would be really hard for the controllers to keep, you know, screwing with our brains if we're not in on it. You know, our compliance helps all of this going, and it's a huge aspect of it. You know, you can't fight with someone who's not fighting back. It gets boring after a while.
Yeah, unless, of course, you're a sadistic person, and you prefer if they don't fight back and you continue to torture them for their entire lives from afar. And that's another part of the belief structure of the elite that I've hearing a lot about, is that they really love making people suffer and live a torturous existence. You know, they're the really sick people who should be getting the greyhound therapy, in my opinion.
Well, they should be getting the other way around, the permanent institutionalization.
Yeah, I mean, who wants congressmen that are whacked out on meds running around the country?
Exactly. We have that now.
Hey, wait. This suddenly explains a lot.
Yes, it does.
Is that not the reason why the country is going down? Something chronic? It's because everybody's medicated, isn't it? What's the percentage of the population is currently on some kind of medication?
I know that the U.S. is the most heavily medicated country in the world.
And it's falling apart at the seams. I think I see a connection here.
Yes, and we're also one of the most unhappiest countries in the world. And I think some of the underdeveloped or third world countries are
Kenya.
Most happiest. Yes.
Yeah, because they run a lot and weave baskets together and sing songs, basically.
Go figure.
And they have the happiest existence on Earth, officially.
So being happy and spending time together and being part of your community and contributing and having a high self-esteem and feeling like you're contributing leads to a productive
community.
Yes.
You know, really, that's all it's about, having a loving family, good friends, and a decent, active life amongst other people that, are, you know, accept you for who you are. Mate, it'll be very difficult to become unhappy, because then your mate will come over and cheer you up, isn't it?
Yes.
We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com in just a few minutes. I hope it doesn't drive you crazy. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's my final segment with Suzanne Posel today. And how quickly people forget. You ever notice that when a politician does something wrong, people forget all about it? Like they'll do 20, 30 wrong things, and it'll all be a long list of them, a litany, if you will. And then just before they need your vote, they pull out a couple of really nice things to say and do that don't really help anybody anyway. And then people forget about all the bad things and vote for you again, and then get really ticked off after you get elected, of course, that you didn't keep your word. You freaking idiot. Who do you think you're talking about, eh? I mean, come on. Seriously. You think somebody gets into politics because he's an honest man who does right by everybody? Even if he is, is predicated by the fact that there's a system and a structure. You can't be an honest and decent man in the government because the rules aren't set up that way. Honest, decent man sees a problem and goes, you know, okay, I'm going to solve that because it's real nasty and it's bad for the people and what have you. You're doing it in a government and say, well, actually, you've got to do this committee thing first and you've got to read this massive amount of legislation first and you've got to do such and such and blah, 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 to the point where you can't get freaking anything done.
Exactly. And I wrote this article last week, but when I wrote it and I put it up on my website, a lot of the... This is about Rand Paul. The article is called "Surprise: Rand Paul Now Supports Americans with Drones, Killing Americans with Drones." And when I posted it, all of the Rand Paul fans came out and started trolling me, and I was blocking and deleting people left and right. It was incredible. I just had to like walk away and say,
"It's like
okay,
Space
fine,
Invaders when that happens, you know?"
Yes, it was.
And just when you think you're really blowing them away, they speed up and change direction.
Absolutely. Now, I want to read to you, in the article is the clip from Fox News where Rand Paul said these things, and I want to read the quote to you. Seriously, folks. Rand Paul said, quote, "I've never argued against technology being used when you have an imminent threat, an active crime going on. If someone comes out of a liquor store with a weapon and $50 in cash, I don't care if a drone kills him or a policeman kills him. But it's different if you want to fly a drone over your hot tub or your backyard just because you want to do surveillance on someone and watch their activities." Okay, so Rand Paul was never against targeted assassinations. He was never against the use of drones to kill Americans. That whole 13-hour filibuster, not only was it a cover for the $1 trillion that the House gave the Department of Defense, the VA, and Planned Parenthood through Obamacare, not only was he covering for that so nobody noticed, but also he never was against the targeted assassinations using drones, using military weaponry to kill Americans on American soil, especially if you rob a liquor store. What he is against is if you're sitting in your hot tub and the police use a drone to spy on you. Well, in the grand scope of things, on one hand, you have targeted assassinations. On the other hand, you have somebody with a drone watching you while you're in your hot tub. I say, who cares? Come on. I'd want to know that when I'm living in my country, the government isn't going to say that I'm a combatant and kill me with a Predator drone. I also can't...
What happened to trials and prosecutions and things of that nature? Aren't you supposed to try and arrest criminals and then bring them to justice instead of just shooting first and asking questions later?
No. We have the NDAA. That's all out. No. Due process is gone. Look at what they did.
My mistake.
Yes. It's okay. That's how we used to be. Now we have the NDAA. And look at what has happened with the Boston bombing. These two gentlemen, and I can go into this on another show because it's really convoluted. But essentially, the cops killed the older brother and then they shot the younger brother in the throat. So he couldn't speak. And by the way, folks, it wasn't the drones and the heat-seeking cameras that they used that found the younger brother in the boat underneath the tarp. It was the owner of the property when they lifted the martial law. The owner, his name is David Hansberry. He came outside to smoke a cigarette and noticed a blood trail and called the cops. So the police state did not solve any problems other than proving that people will give up their rights, knock on the door and demand that you come in and search my house. Sure, officer, yeah, we're afraid because there's a killer out in the loose. And Rand Paul never even cared about whether or not the government or the police state, the local police officers, your governor, doesn't care whether or not they use drones to kill you. What he's concerned about is if somebody's watching you when they shouldn't be watching you, if there's a peeping Tom, which happens to be the local police department.
Okay. And does he know about the Pentagon being caught with umpteen millions of pornographic images of children and stuff like that?
I don't know if he does, but... It's huge for people to understand that when somebody says, I'm against drones, don't just automatically assume that what you understand them to be saying is what they're actually saying. You have to listen to what they're actually saying. And he had, the next day Rand Paul did damage control. He had Judge Andrew Napolitano come out and say he never wavered on his stance against drones. And he put a disclaimer up on his website for the senator of Kentucky, saying that he still believes in what he filibustered against, and he hasn't changed his stance on drones. So when I was reading that, I was thinking, okay, well then everybody misunderstood you. You were not talking about targeted assassinations, which is what we were talking about. You were talking about surveillance. But you're all for it. Hey, look, a liquor store weapon, $50 in cash. What if the owner of the liquor store subdued the attacker, grabbed his gun and the money that he had in his hand, and as the police come up to the scene, he runs out the door with the gun in his hand and the money and says, I got him subdued. And the police officers misinterpret the owner as the guy, the perpetrator, and shoot him or drone him. Is that okay? Apparently it is.
And nothing's... Have you ever heard of the term an open and shut case?
Yes.
It would create a lot of those if the person was in a casket, don't you think? That's an open and shut case.
Sure. Look at the two suspects in the Boston bombing. They're suspects. You're supposed to be a suspect, and then you're supposed to be arrested, and then you're supposed to be... charged with a crime and then convicted, and then you receive the punishment. Not the other way around. You don't receive the punishment as you're a suspect. We don't know. When we're in the suspect phase, we don't know what's going on. We're just trying to take a hold of or subdue whoever we think is causing the problem, and we'll figure it out later. We don't kill that person and then try to reverse engineer it. And in the clip, when you listen to this, the moderator for Fox News, I was surprised because he became very uncomfortable. Rand Paul said things like, well, jury trials mess up all the time and they fake evidence all the time. Well, here I am thinking about, okay, I know that the drones and the heat-seeking cameras that were used that they claim found the younger brother in the boat were not what actually found him, what not tipped him off. It was the owner of the property smoking a cigarette. So how do I know that they didn't fake that? Rand Paul admits that they fake evidence all the time.
So let me get this straight. In America, your legal choices are now either a jury, a judge, or an executioner. So you've got a corrupt judge, an inept jury, and a trigger-happy executioner waiting in the wings. Which way do you want to go?
Yes, and I guess it all depends on who gets to you first.
Yeah. Drones are pretty quick. They're a lot faster than judges and bailiffs, as far as I've seen.
Yeah, just ask anybody in Pakistan or in India or any of the other countries. We're killing people all day, every day. Hundreds of people, including women and children.
Now, but maybe this is legal under the Constitution because it allows people speedy access to justice. Indiscriminate explosive justice.
Now our legal system is set up with checks and balances so that we don't convict the wrong person. They are allowed to face their accuser. They're allowed to face the evidence against them and rebut or defend themselves. That's why they're called a defendant and a prosecutor.
Well, it's a little bit harder to defend yourself if you're dead than you're a defendant.
Absolutely. And once you're dead, they can say whatever they want about you and you can't say anything against them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's one bit of eyewitness testimony, which is not going to be heard about, is there?
Now, the eyewitnesses to when the younger brother was found, they were cheering. The people in the neighborhood who were there, they were cheering. And at a baseball game, they were chanting USA, USA, like little zombies, you know, no regard for the process of law or anything. We don't know what happened. We only know the official story, which changes depending on which newspaper or mainstream that you're listening to.
Allegedly, they had to shut down a number of press conferences because the first questions the journalists were asking was, why was there a drill at the exact same time that this bomb went off? And you told us that you were going to be testing an explosive device at the end of the marathon, and it was just a drill over the loudspeakers. No more questions. Get out of here. Apparently, it happened a number of times. You know, everyone is like, "Come on, it's like the most major news story to happen since sliced bread." And no, inappropriate questioning. Yeah, just
that's America.
Show you. You've got to come up with the right questions. I mean, questions that'll actually foretell some kind of a truth about the instance. I mean, you're just not a journalist, bro. Go home. All right. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good for the economy, because now everybody's got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. A very special guest is from Conspiracy This Week. He has a radio show and a YouTube channel and what have you, and his name is David Boyle. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Vinny. Really appreciate it.
Well, you had me on your show, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Actually, we talked for almost 3 hours, like two old ladies, didn't we?
Yeah.
And we really had a good show. I mean, I really appreciated you coming on my show, and I want to reciprocate, and I look forward to it.
Well, here we go then. Could you tell us why you started your radio show, Conspiracy, this week?
Basically, just like you, I mean, I'm involved in finding the truth, right? I mean, that's what anybody is in this movement. Hopefully, that's what they're out for. I know that you're not out for making millions, and somebody else that I really admire is also Jack Blood, and he's not out to make millions on it. There are others that are out to make money, but for myself, I just decided that I've had about 30 years of knowledge, and I thought it was time that I expressed it.
You know, this is actually a problem that a lot of people have. Did you have some kind of a, a confidence boost or some kind of event that made you know what, I'm not going to put this off any longer?
Not necessarily. I just, getting on YouTube and seeing so many people that had opinions and were broadcasting and stuff, it kind of tweaked my interest and made me want to do something. I mean, shows like yourself, Vinny, I mean, let's face it, you're on 5 days a week, right? So, I mean, you hammer at it every day and you do a lot of work, which doesn't necessarily get appreciated in the alternative media, and I really commend you for doing it. And somebody like yourself and Jack Blood, I'd have to say were some of the motivating factors for me to get in and do my own show.
And how long has it been running for?
Right now, it's probably about 3.5 to 4 months. I want to do a show that's going to have some call-ins too, like yourself, and have some fabulous guests like you do. But basically, I got started in this stuff when I was about 14 years old, and right now I'm 46. So that's quite a long time, and at 14 years old...
Well, David, we appear to have lost your audio for a second there. You're back, though.
Okay. And basically what I said was that I got started in this stuff when I was 14 years old. And at 14 years old, you really don't want to deal with anything other than maybe sports or girls, right? Let's face it. You don't want a burden of the world on you and having... a knowledge of what the hell is actually happening. But I was lucky enough that I had two older brothers who were six years older than myself and in university at the time. And one of them was actually a political science major. So one day he comes home and he has this magazine, this newsletter, and gives it to me to read. And it was the Lyndon LaRouche Executive Intelligence Review. And obviously my first reaction is this guy's a lunatic. You know, like, well, where's he coming from, you know? Well, are you calling the Queen a drug dealer? Are you saying Henry Kissinger is a lunatic, and Cyrus Vance, Jimmy Carter, all these things are going on in my mind, and I'm reading this stuff and I'm saying this is crazy. You know, this is like UFO stuff. So basically what I ended up doing, you know, I researched it myself a little bit. At the time, obviously, there's no internet available, so you got to go to the library, you got to read some, you know, documents, whether it's Federal Reserve stuff or whatever it is. And then I read actually his book, Dope Inc., and I read another book, None Dare Call It Conspiracy. And that actually woke me up to something obviously was going on that most of the mainstream media were not reporting on.
Do you feel that you're filling a bit of a gap?
Right now, yes. I mean, in Canada, there are some shows out there, obviously. There's a Good Truther movement in Toronto, which is the mecca of Canada. I'm in Montreal, and I know you've had some people in Montreal on your show as well. And I know on American Freedom Radio, you have Truther Girls, and she's from Montreal. So there is some representation of Montreal, but maybe not a logical side of what's going on. I mean, there are a lot of people who are in the Truther movement that sway in and out, and you know, they deal with some things that are not, you know, mainstream. They're not logical. They're a little bit out there kind of stuff. David Icke-ish stuff. So I try to keep my show pretty much straightforward. I don't, you know, not that I'm not interested in the occult and aliens and stuff like that, but I try to get to the root of the cause and what the hell is going on logically. That's the way I try to approach it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's good to have some kind of a baseline by which you interpret the universe, isn't it? Because if you're all just a kind of open slather, and you could be taken anywhere.
Exactly. Well, not that I claim to be an expert on anything, because I'm not. I mean, there are people, you know, that are far more informed than myself. But I try to stick to the stuff that, that you know, I can get a handle on and get a little bit of a conversation going with. I've had people on my show, for example, like Jim Mars, who is, you know, I'm sure you're aware of who Jim Mars is. He's into the occult, but he's also into the JFK stuff, and he's into, you know, the Federal Reserve stuff and things of that nature. I also am going to be interviewing Jim Fetzer right after this program, so he's another guy that you've interviewed.
I haven't interviewed Jim Mars yet.
Oh, no. He's a fascinating individual.
Hook a brother up, yo.
I will. Actually, I interviewed Bruce Montalvo about 2 weeks ago, who's been on your show as well. And I hooked up Bruce with Jim Mars. Hopefully that's going to work out for him, because Jim is an amazing, amazing guy. I mean, he's written like 7 or 8 books. Primarily, obviously, you know, with the Kennedy assassination and one of the books that was used for the JFK film, right, by Oliver Stone. So I'm sure you're aware of that. But, you know, these are some of the people that I really respect in the Truther movement. I don't dig into the occult stuff because I'm not familiar with it. I mean, basically, I've never researched it. I actually have Laura Eisenhower coming on the show this weekend, and that's going to be fascinating for me because I've never dug into the stuff that she digs into, and I'm really interested to learn, and I'm looking forward to stuff like that.
I do think that that's part of the exciting things. In fact, I was recanting last night, I believe, about what it's like when you first start getting into radio and you start to talk to all these really great and amazing people. And it's just like you're flying, man. It's so cool because these people are great people and they have lots of really important and, more to the point, incredibly interesting stuff to say. And suddenly, you know, you're speaking with them.
Right.
How has it affected you?
Well, it's changed my perspective. Like I said, I mean, going back, you know, at 14 years old, you know, you don't want to understand about this stuff, right? I mean, that's not your priority. You know, your priority is to get through high school, you know, maybe, you know, go to university, you know, get a job, the usual stuff, the slave stuff that you've expressed considerably on your show, right? You know, go working for the man, right? And, you know, I mean, it's kind of this whole movement and this whole awakening, you know, you obviously go through different stages, right? You know, when you first start this stuff, you know, obviously you're in denial, right? You don't want to admit that anything is going on that you're not privy of, right? Because that makes you ignorant to yourself, right? So you have an ego thing going on, and you don't want to admit it. So you try to push it away, whatever. And then ultimately, if you have a logical mind, you start to dig in a little bit, and then you realize that, hey, you know, maybe something is going on. Then you have this anxiety, you know, you can have this anger, you can have depression. You go through a whole series and slew of emotions that can really drive you nuts, you know. And sometimes you got to back away from it. You know, you got to back away from it a little bit, and you got to be able to get back, you know, to the normalcy of what's going on. It doesn't mean that you have to give up your values and what you've learned, but you have to back away sometimes and you know, you doing a show 5 days a week. I mean, it's got to be crazy for you sometimes.
Yeah, it's getting a bit tough, especially right about now, to be honest.
What's tough about it?
Oh, it's just a lot of work, man. Doing all the editing and all the uploading and all of that kind of stuff, and doing it right after the show, like doing a show every day, kind of. It's really draining on your energy to be talking for about 2 hours and really intensely paying attention to something. You know, it's like a marathon. And by the end of it, you're pretty exhausted, and you've got to do all these other things. And, you know, sometimes it gets on top of you, and you're just like, oh man, I need a week off or something like that. I'm about to burn out.
Exactly. Well, I can understand you, because I'm starting a website, like I said, which will be conspiracythisweek.com. And just doing the website yourself, I mean, I'm not hiring anybody to do it. I mean, everything that I do is myself, you know? And it's incredible. I mean, it's absolutely incredible the amount of backlog of stuff, the research you got to do, and just the grunt work of every day doing this stuff. Even when you're editing, MP3 files and whatever else, I'm not doing video, and I'm not doing stuff like going out like you do, which I saw recently, and going out to the protest that you had in New Zealand there on your show. I'm not even doing that stuff. I mean, I do have a full-time job. So this is something that I do on my own, at my own expense, you know, just because I want to do it. And actually, I wanted to let your listeners know that, you know, if you have any kind of reservations about who's actually one of the integral people in the movement, I want to give you like a little anecdote, which obviously Vinny is aware of. Last week, I contacted Vinny, but I think it was Thursday, by email, and one of my buddies actually was diagnosed with brain cancer. And, you know, I had contacted Vinny, and I realized that he had somebody on his show whose name is Rick Simpson, who has a documentary called Run for the Cure, for those of you who don't know it. And Vinny was fantastic for me personally, because he sent an email off to Rick. And within 15 minutes of me sending him an email, he sent it off to Rick. And within another 15 minutes, Rick was Skyping me, and I was talking to him on Skype, you know. So what some people don't understand is that, you know, Vinny is a kind-hearted guy, you know. And I really would really stress that people go to his website and donate, because he's doing this, you know, on his own dime. And some people don't know the things that he does behind the scenes and the respect that he gets from the people in the Truther movement. So, you know, I really commend Vinny for what he does. And just on the air, I want to thank him for giving me that contact. And actually, Rick, the next night, agreed to be on my show. So we have a two-hour interview on Blog Talk that I just posted, Conspiracy This Week, with Rick Simpson talking about hemp oil and cure for cancer. So once again, thanks a lot, Vinny. Really appreciate it.
Well, you know, it's amazing what you can accomplish when you just hook two people up together. And it's like in business networking, they tell you that networking isn't just about you meeting people. It's also about you introducing other people to people that they might be able to get along and do something with. And what's interesting is like you'll call up some of the media outlets here and you'll ask for the name and the contact details of a certain guest that they had on one of their programs. And they say, sorry, we don't share that information with the competition. I think that's just being a douche.
Right.
That's, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen?
They could say no. Right? Exactly. I mean, like, come on. You know, I mean, it's incredible when you think about it. You know, I mean, some people that I've contacted, I never got a response from. And Vinny, you were one of the first that got back to me. And I know you're a big fan of Jack Blood as well, who I interviewed on my show as well, and you've interviewed. And he was very adamant and straightforward and right away, and yes, man, I'll do it, you know. So people like you and Jack Blood, you know, are people that should be, you know, like on the level of an Alex Jones, you know, in my opinion, you know. But, you know, you stay true to your principles and you don't sell out, right? And, you know, people like you are, you're not a dime a dozen, right? That's what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say that I really appreciate what you did. And my buddy actually went last Monday and had his brain cancer surgery. They removed 37 lesions, which is incredible. And I'm working hard because this guy is somebody who actually works in a hospital. And, you know,
hospital. Have you been in contact with Dr. Bob Melamed?
No, I haven't.
Okay, because he's associated with Rick Simpson. He does the hemp oil as well. Right. And he sent me pictures of a guy who had massive lesions, like one the size of a softball growing out of his skull. And the surgery that they were going to do, they were going to cut off frickin' half his head, right? And they applied the hemp oil to these giant lesions, multiple ones of them, and they got smaller and smaller and smaller, and now the only thing you can see is maybe a tiny little bit of a crater underneath very fresh baby skin on the top of this guy's head.
Incredible. Well, I wasn't able to convince my friend not to have the surgery. Like I said, I was trying to say he works in a hospital, so he works with doctors every day. But he does have to do radiation, which I'm trying to get him to not do, because he's already been through cancer once. So the survival rate second time around is not very good, right? So I'm trying to get him to do the hemp oil, at least to avoid the radiation part of it. But, you know as well as I do, Vinny, that people who are brainwashed every day with the media...
People are afraid to try new things at the best of times, especially things that they've been brought up with their entire life, to demonize an attack and say that it's crackpot and not believe it, until the point goes where they eventually die because they just don't want to do the research, they don't want to listen. And this happened to my father as well. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Oh,
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And David, I wanted to say something. I really appreciate you, basically how much you appreciate the show and what I do here. And I was just thinking about it, because every single time that I've asked the listeners to donate, like if I'm in a jam, like if I've got a piece of equipment that needs replaced, or I need to move house and need so much rent in advance, or my car breaks down and I need a new one, or anything that I need, when I ask the listeners, they give it to me. And in some cases, pretty substantial gifts. And it was occurring to me just how much people really love the show, and how much of a difference that I'm actually making, that somebody would even want to do that for me. And my mate Dan was asking me last night, is it weird, Vinny, you know, to have fans and things like that? And I was just like, well, nah, bro. The fans are people just like me, you know, honest, genuine, generous people. And so you just talk to them, and suddenly it's not weird anymore, because you get to know that there's people like me everywhere. Just not in the same circumstance.
Right. But you don't find that in corporate America or corporate Canada or corporate New Zealand, right? I mean, it's every man for themselves, right? And, you know, I know a lot, well, not a lot, but enough about your show and how you've been somebody who has a reputation of being a true guy, you know, just, you know, a guy next door, you know, you do your stuff and people appreciate what you do. And somebody like yourself, you know, you have to be on the radio. I mean, let's face it. You're not somebody that, like I said before, that's going out and trying to be Alex Jones, right? I mean, I know that probably Alex Jones, when we spoke in our interview, you said that probably Alex Jones was the one who pushed you to get on the radio. I listened to Alex Jones for probably 10 years. But he never pushed me to be on the radio myself. And like I said before, it was people like yourself and Jack Blood that actually pushed me on, because I wanted to do something that was legitimate, you know, something that is, it's truthful. It's not something that, I'm not trying to make money at it, you know, I'm not trying to be the next Howard Stern like an Alex Jones. I just want to get a message across, and I think I personally think that I have something valid to say, and that's why I've done it. And I think that's why you're in it as well, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you've got something valid to say and then you've got a platform to say it, it makes you feel validated, incidentally.
Exactly. And we don't know how long we're going to have this platform, right? Obviously, with SIPA and Obama going nuts and trying to regulate the internet, which basically regulates free speech, you know? So how long...
That CISPA legislation got passed during the Boston bombings while everybody was distracted with that.
Exactly. Well, I was listening to your show before and you had Suzanne Posel on it, and obviously, I mean, everybody who knows that's in this movement knows that there's something fishy about what the hell went on with Boston Marathon, right? I mean, you don't have to be a genius.
My mate was telling me last night, how freaking convenient is it that around the same time as this Boston bombing, they find some alleged 9/11 plane parts in New York?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, I mean, let's face it, you got to be asleep to think that the people that are running the government, basically the Goldman Sachs, you know, the Rothschilds, Rockefellers, all these people, Queen of England, the oligarchy and all that stuff, are the same people that run the media. You know, they're the same people that are the largest contributors to the presidential campaigns in the U.S. I mean, if you want to talk conspiracy, it's right in front of you. You don't have to be a genius to figure that out, right?
Yep, that's why I found it's really fun to have conversations with other truthers, because it doesn't matter what you're talking about, it all ties in, and you click, you get each other, and before you know it, you've had a 3 or 4 hour conversation.
Exactly. When I had Jim Mars on my show there, I mean, I basically asked him his definition of conspiracy, and he told me everything is a conspiracy. doesn't matter what you do. I mean, anytime you got two people together, no matter what they're trying to do, whether it's going to a movie, you know, in a business meeting, on a conversation in business, two chums just banging it out at night, just trying to figure out, you know, talking about sports or whatever, or talking about their buddies and their mates, it's a conspiracy. So everything is a conspiracy. But what ends up happening is that the media and the, you know, they've put such a spin on the word conspiracy that we think conspiracy is Lee Harvey Oswald and a lone nut. You know, that's immediately what comes to mind, right?
Yeah, and that's what's quite funny as well, is you get demonized and you get called a conspiracy theorist when you read somebody a headline out of Reuters.
Right.
and the term's been so demonized that even conspiracy theorists don't like to use the word conspiracy because they think that it makes people see them as conspiracy theorists.
Right. So maybe I shouldn't have called my show Conspiracy This Week, right?
You know, I don't know about you, bro, but I'm a fan of taking something that has a very bad connotation and mixing it up and bringing back a good connotation to it. I think Conspiracy This Week is a great name for a radio show. It sounds very official because everybody's now talking about conspiracy. It's the new hip thing.
Exactly. Well, that's, you know, like I said before, everything is a conspiracy. So it doesn't matter. You have to admit it, right? But as the U.S. government puts out, it's not a conspiracy. You know, when you're talking about 9/11, that whatever it was, 19 fundamentalist lunatics, you know, were able to bypass a $40 billion defense system and simultaneously smash planes into buildings and, you know, all while taking, you know, orders from a guy on dialysis in a cave, you know. But that's not a conspiracy, right?
A guy who was already dead.
Allegedly, like our buddy says.
Allegedly, you know, dude, you got your Mac laptop and you've got, you know, no freaking heartbeat. How much of a dangerous person could you possibly be, you know?
even at 6'5" or whatever the hell he was there, I mean, obviously, if you're pulling, you know, you're pulling this gurney or whatever the hell it is along with you with with dialysis there, and, you know, with one hand free and you're trying to, you know, like, give commands.
It's like in Minority Report, you know, like they've got Osama bin Laden hooked up in the milk and stuff like that with electrodes on his dead skull.
It could very well be. I don't know. I mean, it just seems so far-fetched. But it's amazing that the mainstream media has been able to push this on people. And even though there is a movement and, you know, you see polls that are out there that you know, a lot of people, you know, 50% of people believe, or whatever it is, that 9/11 was an inside job. You still, when you go, you know, the average person, you know, if you talk about something like this at work, you know, or at a dinner party, or with friends over, at a wedding, whatever, what ends up happening? These people think you're nuts. You know?
Wait a second. Something just occurred to me, bro. 9/11 is the new JFK. It's been more than 10 years, right? And nothing been done about it. And people, most people believe it's an inside job, but still ain't nothing going to be done about it, right? Ever.
Exactly. Well, we're like 75 years is the time to release, I think, basically everything on the JFK. So we're still about, 25 years. It's coming up on the 50th anniversary. So we're still 25 years away from not knowing the truth.
You know, it just occurs to me that you can really, really dupe people for a very long time just into an action by just muddying the waters a little bit. You know, a little bit of propaganda there, a little bit of scare tactics over there, a little bit of Sunday football over there, and hey, presto, you've got a population that really doesn't give a frack that they're being governed by completely ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbags.
Right. We have a show in Canada, and it's called the Rick Mercer Show, and it's absolutely hilarious because what he's done is he's created this show where he goes into the U.S., okay? And I'm not U.S. bashing. That's not my game. But he goes into the U.S. It could be somebody from the U.S. coming into Canada would be the same exact result. And he asks these people the most ridiculous questions that everybody should know. And most people don't know. They can't name their governor. They can't name the Prime Minister of Canada. They can't name their local representative, you know. And these are blatant questions. So it just goes to show you what we're up against when we're trying to educate people. It's incredible.
Well, here's the interesting thing, and we brought this up last time in the conversation as well. How many people are awake today that weren't awake yesterday? And think about, say, I heard some statistics being read off that people who are aware that the Federal Reserve was private, say, in the mid-90s, it was like 5, 8%. And now it's like over 80%. Mm. You know, we're experiencing like a real sea change. The problem is, unless you're out in it and you're actually seeing it happen, and unless it's, you know, reported or whatever, people are always confused as to how much people are waking up or how much is going on. And I see all the signs being incredibly encouraging. I see the real bad tyranny stuff that goes on all over the place with CISPA and this massive police state operation in Boston as a terribly good thing, because all of those bad things that the government does actually wake people up. And Rolling Stone magazine has just released an article saying that the conspiracy theorists were right all along. And here it is. New World Order.
Right. But how long are we going to be able to do this, Vinny, though? I mean, let's face it.
Hey, as long as we freaking can. And even when the internet gets shut down, we get our website censored. Hey, mate, even in communist Russia, they used to do carbon copies and things like that. And print media became really big in the underground. You know, just switch venues, just like the Nazis did in World War II and when they moved to America.
Project Paperclip. Yeah. We know about
that.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, you know, it's fascinating, though, when you look at what is actually going on and you look at the amount of people that are aware of it and becoming aware of it. I mean, the internet, I don't think the people that, you know, obviously the internet was created, from what I understand, as a military device, right? I don't think they thought that one day you and I would be able to talk, you know, across, you know, I don't know how many miles away we are, but we're pretty far apart, and do a show exactly against what they believe in. Is that fair?
Technology is a double-edged sword at the best of times, mate. Doesn't matter how bad a purpose you've got for a device, or how good a purpose. It can always be used to other ends, can it? Just by somebody manipulating it and using it in a different way.
Right. Well, we do know. I don't know what the laws are in New Zealand, and even in Canada, they're a little bit hush hush about it. But we all know about Google, right? I mean, Google is there to spy on people, right? I mean, there's no way in the world that this company would have been able to do what they're able to do now and launch satellites. I mean, we're talking billions of dollars in investment. You know, it's impossible that they were able to do this without some kind of government intervention. That's my belief anyway. What do you think?
Yeah, well, didn't China kick out Google and accuse them of spying on them?
Yeah, exactly. Because we know that Facebook is you know, has been taken over on some levels by the government. You know,
DARPA.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, there's been programs that are out there for the last 50 years. I mean, you can talk about HAARP. You can talk about the Storm Furry project. You can talk about chemtrails, which I know you're big on. And I've seen some videos that you've produced about that. I mean, it's incredible when you look at it that all these things are out there for people to see, but they just don't. They don't see it.
Well, in a lot of cases, you might be right, but my point has always been that the masses don't matter. And statistically throughout history, whenever it comes to a revolution, whether it's a positive revolution or some kind of a tyrannical coup, at most there's only a few percent of the general population involved. 95% of people sit on the sidelines and just take whatever punishment comes their way.
Exactly.
That means that a very small amount of well-organized, incredibly dedicated and decent people can overthrow a bunch of ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery and instill a government that will actually stand the test of time, that will protect people's rights and liberties for as long as humanly possible. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's our final segment here with David Boyle from Conspiracy This Week. You can find him on YouTube, and eventually you'll be able to find him on the web at conspiracythisweek.com. But not this week. Probably like in a couple of weeks' time, they'll have the Conspiracy This Week. I don't know where I was going with that. Anyway.
One of these weeks.
Now, is the delay in the getting up of the website a conspiracy? According to Jim Mars, yes.
Well, you know what? I'm by myself doing it, so technically it's not a conspiracy.
Well, see, and it just shows that even though you've got a full-time job, you can still contribute to the frickin' truth movement. Isn't that interesting?
Exactly. Well, it is a lot of work, and you have to be passionate about it, and you have to have people supporting you. Obviously, your family, you know. It does take some time.
Do you watch less TV and play less computer games now?
I don't watch very much TV, actually. I mean, I shied away from that, I don't know how many years ago, you know, because it's all propaganda. I mean, no matter what you listen to and what you watch there, I mean, TV shows, movies, news, no matter what it is, as a truther, you can read between the lines when you watch it, right? You can see what's there and what you're told to believe, right?
See, I don't call it watching TV. I call it monitoring enemy communique.
Exactly. Well, you know what? It's unfortunate that there are still people who, you know, watch American Idol and watch The Voice and watch 19 hours on Sunday of American football. And they're just clueless. And then they want to regurgitate it on Monday morning, you know?
That just sent shivers down my spine. Could you say that again? Did you say the words 19 hours of football on Sunday?
I'm talking American football, not your football. You're probably football is soccer, right? I would think.
No, we call soccer soccer. I think it's the Englishmen who call it football.
So you are free from England.
Nobody's free from England, son.
We're both Commonwealthers, so it's incredible that we're talking today and we actually know. And that's the difference between us and Americans, because Americans actually believe they're free. That's the incredible point of it, you know. And the only way to control America is by finance, right? I mean, let's face it. If you control the money, you control whatever you want, right? As Rothschild said 200 years ago, you know?
Well, they do say that the sun never sets on Britannia's holdings, and I'd be inclined to agree.
Exactly. Well, you have a governor general, right? Like we do?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. And our governor general basically meets or communicates either directly with the queen or with one of her stooges there once a week, you know, probably as you do, and gets dictated what is going to be law, you know, what's going to happen, where are you going to go, you know. It's incredible that, you know, the British Empire is not dead and people actually believe it is. It's just
it hasn't been the British Empire for a long time. Like I think what happened is the British monarchy and corporate scumbags like the Dutch East India Trading Company kind of decided that they would be much better off conquering the world if they worked together masquerading one part as the loving, affectionate, freedom, democracy-giving government, and on the other hand as the ruthless corporation, which basically takes slaves and all the resources that they can, and then they just divvy the booty up amongst them, and nothing's changed.
Exactly. I mean, these are the same people that forced opium on the Chinese, right? The two opium wars that maybe some of your listeners don't remember or haven't researched. But, you know, when you're dealing with oligarchies and monarchies and empires, these people never relinquish their power, right? They don't want to be out of power. So the easiest thing for them to do is to go back and you know, take a back seat to things and have some minions do their dirty work and just to reap the benefits. I mean, that's basically what we're seeing now. I mean, everybody who's pushing, don't kid yourself. You know, the Bank of London is the major bank in the world. You know, don't kid yourself. It's not New York. It's not Wall Street. That's the bank that dictates, in my opinion, anyways, everything that goes on in the world. Everything that goes on in the world. What do you think?
I don't know. What I was just thinking about is how people know the Fed's private now, kind of thing, and how lots of people are waking up. And you mentioned before about how long we're going to be able to do this. I was just thinking, you know, if you're like somebody who likes to keep a lid on things and you know those control freak kind of people, how they kind of panic and go crazy as soon as things get out of their hands,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they start getting aggressive. I can just imagine these people sitting there, analysts pouring through all these different shows that are popping up all over the place, all these immensely popular YouTube channels and the explosion of the new media coming out of their ears, just biting their fingers off with tension, freaking out, totally going nuts.
Do you think we're on the radar?
I think everybody's automatically on the radar by default. Whether or not you're the focus is a different question, because I think everybody's under a general form of surveillance and data mining, but it's only once you cause an actual problem for them that they actually come after you.
Right. Well, obviously, I mean, you know, you used to listen to Alex Jones, and obviously we know that he's probably the most prominent person in the alternative media, right? George Norrie is another one. He's on the radar for sure. Do we know that what he's doing is legitimate? I don't know. The jury's out on that. Has he woken a lot of people up, like you said in our interview last month? Yes, he woke you up. So the fact that you are on the radio today is a testament to what Alex Jones is doing. He wasn't somebody who influenced me, because I was influenced long before Alex Jones even existed.
And the person who gave me this radio show used to produce Alex Jones.
Exactly. Exactly. So there is some, you know, even all of the bashing that he's taken, there is some relevance to it. I mean, you know, it does produce people like yourself. You know, you're not an Alex Jones. You know, you're not striving to be an Alex Jones. But you're relevant, you know, and there is a market for people like you and me, you know, above and beyond what he does, because he has the, you know, the big sponsors and everything else. But he has pushed people to another level, right? Let's face it.
And you were single-handedly.
Exactly. You were talking earlier. I was listening to your show earlier, and one of his prodigies, whatever you want to call it, Dan Bedondi, was actually the heckler that you were talking about with Suzanne Pozel. I was listening to the show before. He's the guy who was pushing those questions that you were talking about in the previous hour. And I don't agree with this guy. He's not, you know, he's not the guy I want, you know, portraying the image of alternative media. But he did strike at the root, you know, and he did push the envelope. And he did get the message out, and he did have, you know, I don't know, however many tens of thousands of hits on YouTube pushing this. So everybody who is in this, and we come back to why you asked me why I started my show, and that's the reason. If I can change one person, I've done my job, right?
In a very, very altruistic sense of the word.
Right.
What else are we here for? You know, I don't think there's really any higher calling than helping other people, really.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. And you do it on like I mentioned before, you do it on other levels, you know, helping me out with my buddy and getting me hooked up with Rick Simpson, going back to the beginning of the show there. I mean, there are not a lot of people actually in the truth movement that I agree with. And I never agree with anyone 100%. But there are a couple of people that I would put on a higher moral ground. And you're absolutely one of them. And Jack Blood is another one, which I know you're a big fan of. I've interviewed Jack Blood, and he's a phenomenal guy. And I just commend you, Vinny, for doing what you do. I mean, it's not a low budget show, but you are on a low budget. And that's what's incredible. I mean, you're pushing a message across that people are listening to, and you're doing it, you know, because you love it. Because you really want to send the message out. And I commend you on that.
Well, I think it's more like I've got the ability to do it, therefore I must, because nobody else is doing it, not in New Zealand anyway, not to this extent. So it's got to be done. Somebody has to pave the way, and I just happen to be the one who fell upon the opportunities and took responsibility for it. You know, you look around and you just go, "Hey, there is an alternative media doing this here." Frank, there's a, you know, you call it a gap in the market, but it's more like being needed, absolutely, desperately needed, no matter how bad the quality might be, as long as there's at least something out there. That's what people don't get, is that you can just start off doing something that you will later on regret, and it'll look like crap, sound terrible, or whatever, but then you get better at it, you start learning more, and before you know it, you're really making a difference. But you have to have the confidence in yourself to go out there in the first place, not trying to help yourself, not trying to, you know, line your own pockets or whatever, but actually wanting to help to fulfill a societal need, of which there are many. David Boyle from Conspiracy This Week, thank you very much for coming on the show with me today. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Very much appreciate your support. Please donate or subscribe at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.